This is Rakovic's After Hours.
Oh, hello. I'm sure this time it is a welcome back. You can't not have come back after that last episode with Ollie. What a stonker of an episode 149. If you missed it, you gotta go check it out. It was great. Just me and Pete. That's Ben and Pete for you. In your ears today, we must begin in our usual fashion. Pete, what have you been doing in the not very long since I last saw you?
No, it hasn't been very long, has it?
No.
I have been sifting through all my kit and deciding exactly what is going to go and what is going to stay.
What's made the cut? Oh, dear. Any shockers?
Not really. I'm just filtering through. There's so many little bits and pieces of equipment that I've bought in the past, and they just haven't been utilised properly or not utilised at all in some cases. So I'm collecting it all together, ascending into the loft.
Oh, yeah.
Descending with all the boxes.
Of course, yeah. The boxes,
and carefully photographing everything and then repackaging it in its original retail packaging, ready to be dispatched to hopefully some expectant customers, either by eBay or Reverb or even Facebook Marketplace, depending on which particular product I'm trying to sell on.
Gotcha. Any flagship items?
Frankly, no.
Lots of bits.
I mean, the reasonably pricey bits. I mean, the professional sports commentator headsets that we used to use for the podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're still in very good condition, so they're all going to go because we're refitting our outside broadcast or outside recording setup. It's going to be reconfigured, so we're going to be using SM57s with rather large pop foam filters and the small Shure kind of little shock mount thing that you can get.
Oh, yeah, so you can stick it on the pub table.
Yes, I haven't decided whether to go for little mic stands or to go for sort of floppy gooseneck type of arrangements.
I would suggest little tiny stands because, you know, the gooseneck things, you kind of move them where you want them to be, and then they keep sinking, and
they sort of move out the way when you have to chase them with your mouth.
Yeah, and it would be quite easy to just step away from the mic for a sip in the pub and then back on.
Yes, I most probably will do because I can grab some of those from the store when I'm there next. Other than that, I have been noodling. I'm continuing to noodle.
Wonderful.
And as requested some weeks ago, you wanted something of the Udio Super 6 going through the Autobahn.
I did indeed.
So I have a very short little sample for you that I can play, and you can get the vibe of how it's sounding.
Wonderful. That was majestic. Wonderful. I can't find the words. That was brilliant. Ooh, what a machines.
Yes, I mean, I was particularly pleased with the graduated aftertouch.
Was that what was doing the kind of detune-y situation?
Yes, it started going in. It started getting very, I don't know how
you describe it. Whidlier and trancier in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I initially did that manually, and then I replaced it with actually having really nice exponential curves that you could actually draw within the Cubase so that it really was a lot smoother, because it's difficult to graduate it when you're trying to do it with your sort of hand pressure. So you push down and it tends to switch cut between the two, you know, the standard more sort of more lighter arpeggio sound. And then it gets into that very trancey type of sound. It's hard to express exactly quite what it's doing apart from the fact that I'm applying aftertouch.
Yeah. Well, aftertouch is never as expressive as you want it to be. That's why you need an Osmos one day.
But yeah, I'm generally very pleased with that particular combo, and the Autobahn particularly just adds, because it's only a very slight bit of reverb. Again, it's very easy to overdo it, and it just kind of mushes and washes out.
That's what I always like to do.
So it's just slightly open the reverb, so it just gives it a little bit of a tail on some of those notes.
That was wondrous.
Yes.
Really nice.
Anyway, so that's what I've been doing this week.
Excellent. I have a couple of updates for you. Actually, one's an update, one's a new thing. The Writing Desk project is progressing. Before I came here, I had a detour to pick up a monitor from Gumtree. It's a nice sort of 1080p Dell situation that tilts, pivots, and has height adjust. Do you want to guess how much I paid for it? Sort of this kind of size, probably like a 24-inch kind of computer monitor.
Brand new or used?
Used. A very, very light scratch on the screen that you can't see when you turn it on.
£20.
15. That's a pretty good guess, but I'm pleased with that screamer of a deal, I am. So that's going to sit on top and hopefully will be at the right kind of eye level to fix my horrendous posture when I'm sitting at the desk.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than being hunched over a laptop, because it really makes your shoulders curl
the shoulder
over.
And, rolling. Yeah, and sort of the trackpad and laptop keyboard is bad. It's just for that whole hunching over situation.
If you've got bad posture, even with the way you're using a mouse or the keyboard, it sort of tracks all the way up your arms, doesn't it, as well? You get really out of shape.
Indeed. So I've got my really old mechanical keyboard from Ducky. Still going strong after 7-ish years, I think. Yeah, and I've got the keyboard and mouse, and I'm sitting on one of those weird kneeling kind of ergonomic chair things.
Oh, yes, the no back.
Yeah, I find them quite comfortable. I actually bought those from Telmo before they moved away, and hopefully it's a recipe for success.
Were they too bulky for them to take back to Portugal?
Yeah, just too much faff.
Certainly. I don't think I've even sat on one.
They're pretty good. The first time you do it, if you just go straight in for a four-hour chunk of working or something, it will really hurt your knees because your weight is on your knees. Obviously, it's cushioned, but it's just a different thing. But I eat my dinner sitting on those, and they're quite good because we've got sort of wooden floors, or, you know, those sort of slotted plank things, wood effect, whatever they are. So you can just kind of roll around the kitchen without getting up. It's brilliant. Just push yourself around with your toes and annoy the people downstairs.
Are they slippery or are they on wheels?
They have wheels.
Okay.
Yeah, they're good fun.
So what's the idea? Is it to help with your posture? It makes you sit up straight because you've got
no option.
You've got no back to flop on.
Obviously, if you're at a desk, you can still slouch over forwards on your shoulders or something. But with the screen up high, you want to get your sort of eye level right. Engage the core a little bit, sit up straight, and it'll be a bit better.
I've been considering getting one of those standing desks, or at least one of those ones that's motorized and you can have it in either position.
I think ultimately that is the best solution, but for cheapness, I think that those chairs do an okay job. I'd love a sit stand desk. I think my dad's got one at work, but they're cool.
I mean, they're not cheap, but they're not as expensive as you might imagine.
If you've got a nice kind of desk top already, you can just buy legs if you're willing to kind of adapt something.
And I've also seen ones that actually sit on a standard desk and rise up from that.
My partner's got one of those.
Okay, like a desk topper.
Yeah, and it'll carry sort of an iMac just about, or a display or something, so they're quite flexible. If you're really close to the weight limit, you press the little catch that engages the hydraulic piston thingy, and you sort of lift it, and it's sort of, and you end up using your arms a bit too much, and you think, oh, is it just going to straight back onto the desk if you're not careful?
And your precious IT equipment bounces off and hits the floor.
Exactly. We'll hopefully not have any of that. Speaking of posture and using a keyboard and trackpad and the pain going right the way up your arms, my forearm really hurts. Not for any reason that you're thinking of. Get your mind out of the gutter, you. I did some spoon carving.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that you were going to be doing that at some point.
It was good fun. So, if you've never carved a spoon before, you might not have come across the weird knife that you have to use to kind of hollow out the belly of the spoon. Imagine, if you will, a knife in your head. Handle on the right, blade extending to the left, and now curl the tip of the knife up and back towards the handle. Yeah, you have these weird sort of U-shaped blades, which means you can get those concavities happening. The motion you have to do is really tricky. Let me try and describe that as well. Imagine, if you will, I'm going to stop doing that. So hold the spoon, the handle of the spoon, in your left hand. Place your right thumb. Okay, the spoon is kind of horizontal, parallel with the floor. Your right thumb is going to be on the edge of the round sort of bowl of the spoon. And then if your fingers are currently curled in a fist, that's where you're holding your weird spoon carving knife. the action is to kind of just extend your knuckles and still hold the knife and just bring them back in. Pete knows what I'm doing because I'm doing it in the room, but hopefully you there in the bath, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. For me, that reminds me of how you would peel a potato.
Yeah, there we go. That's a great analogy. That'll do it. And you do that, but obviously it's wood, so it has a fair bit more resistance than a potato, unless you just took it out of the freezer or something. So yeah, that was a killer on the forearm and the knuckles, and I haven't quite recovered. Ouch.
I would imagine seasoned spoon carvers would have quite thick, callousy hands.
Oh yeah, well, I've got a chunky old blister, or had a chunky old blister to prove it. But I'm very pleased with what I made. I should have brought it along. I'll bring it next week.
Where did you go for that experience?
This was, my parents live up in the Cotswolds, and this was the Daylesford Garden Centre, which is the poshest garden centre I've ever seen, experienced. So garden centres and things, they'll have a lot of shop involved. Obviously there's the garden shop, but then there's, don't want to offend anybody, but they're quite mumsy shops, which I love personally. I love browsing those kind of places, but this one takes it to another level. So there's a whole room just for cheese. Doesn't smell great in there because I'm not a big cheese kind of guy, but there's a room for cheese. They have kind of their deli counter, which has a fishmonger, kind of a butcher, and then a freshly caught wild game corner with a fridge looking thing with pheasants hanging in it and quails and so forth. They have all their fancy artisanal alcohol-free distilled spirit alternatives and such like, and it's all very, very expensive. Handmade, very tall beeswax candles and what have you. But the spoon carving thing, I don't think was really that much in collaboration with the garden centre. It was run by the chap who owns Newground Coffee, which is in Oxford-ish, and they only employ ex-offenders, which is pretty cool, and their coffee is delicious. And he's a very nice chap. It was good fun. There were only three of us doing it, so it was a good afternoon.
What made you decide that you needed to have some spoon carving experience in your life?
I don't know. It was a birthday present from my parents, just a kind of a later one, but it was great.
Was it just yourself on your own, or did your dad go
with
you?
Yeah, it is my dad and I. It's good fun. We both made some pretty good spoons, actually. There, how can we compliment them while also saying they're a bit crap? They're a bit rubbish. They are charmingly rustic. They're obviously handmade. Words and phrases such as those. But I'm pleased. It's wonky in a very friendly kind of way.
I've seen some of the ones done by the, let's say, the professional spoon carvers, and they're pretty wonky anyway.
Yeah, often they are, and they'll kind of embrace the sort of multifaceted flat spots that you kind of get from
your chiseling.
Yeah, and the really experienced ones and the great ones can probably very easily create a very smooth surface without any sanding at all, but sometimes they'll go for the kind of the chunky thing for just the artistic merit of it, I suppose
that's the whole purpose of it being a hand-carved spoon. If it wasn't, you might as well just have a machine-made one that's perfectly symmetrical and all that sort of thing.
Exactly.
And not very interesting.
The chap brought along some books for us to have a peruse while we were waiting for everyone to turn up, and can't remember the guy's name, but he has a shop in Hackney, which, yes, he is just a spoon carver, and he can afford to rent a shop front in Hackney. I don't know how that works. Do you know the guy?
I've seen him on television.
You've seen him? Yeah, so he just sits in the front of his...
in the shop window.
Yeah, in the window, just carving spoons.
Yeah, I know exactly.
It is super cool.
It was a little kind of, I don't know if it was a tiny little documentary type thing or an article on the news programme a few years ago.
Yeah, it was just his book. But
and it was him sitting in the window with all his creations hanging up on strings around him, and he was carving away.
Yeah, that's exactly the guy.
Yeah, I was thinking that because you think there can't be that many people who hand carve spoons, but you never know. There might be a secret fraternity of them.
Yeah, maybe there's a weird cult of spoon carvers that you can find if you walk to the centre of the right woodland on the 1st of May. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
But they won't accept you unless you're wearing the right amount of tweed. Right. Wooden ramblings and other such things aside, there are three synthetic things to talk about today, and we're going to save the big ones. Let's quickly take a look at a new-ish thing from friendly people at ALM Busy Circuits. It is another Pamela's module. This is the Pro workout. Oh my.
So what does the Pro give you that the standard Pamela's doesn't.
I think you get two more CV ins, but I'm just going to find the comparison.
And my question is, do they do a dark version?
Well, they did with the new.
Yes, they did, but it was limited.
It will be a matter of time, I would imagine.
I seem to be only buying black modules these days.
Oh, yeah. Just so they can be Scarab compatible.
Yes.
Okay, so a bigger display. It's still not massive. You have new wave shapes, ratchets, trapezoid, parabola, and a couple of new envelope options. Cross output modulations, so you can, I guess, yeah, if you have two separate outputs doing two separate things, you can combine them to do odd things, it seems. So you can have logic functions, unique waveforms and such happening there. Something called flex operations, which is using micro grid timings, whatever those might be, to create bouncing ball type beat loops, or sped up and slowed down outputs, or general chaos. That sounds fun. Yes, up to 4 CV inputs now available for CV control, and faster processing on the inside with increased timing and output resolution. What I want to know is if they've fixed the major limitation with the original, which is that it only outputs positive voltages. You can't have bipolar LFOs on it. So let me see if I can find that out. Oh no, it's still 0 to 5 volts on the outputs. That's one of the biggest complaints with the original. Why wouldn't they try and fix that? Maybe it was such a huge overhaul of the architecture, it wouldn't have been reasonable to develop.
I don't know. I've actually never had a Pamela's of any ilk before. I've considered it, and as I say, they did do a dark version at one stage, and I was trying to track one down, but it was nigh on impossible.
Yeah, very popular, but you will have to subject yourself to a certain amount of menuing. Though, from the popularity, I would assume it's not an insurmountable task.
I've heard so many people raving about how good they are and how useful, but I've got quite a few kind of clock timing type of modules, and there's generally quite a learning curve with them. I've got some that I've never even bothered to study, and hence I don't use very often.
Yeah, I suppose this one is its flexibility as being envelopes, LFOs, and all sorts of other stuff as well, which is the main draw. Anyway, there's a new one. If you've already got a new workout, you probably don't need to upgrade, but if you're thinking about it, just get the new one. Why not? Same size, at least, in HP. I think it's 8. Yeah, it's 8.
Same size, more functionality.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Nice one. The big two. Where do you want to go first, Pete?
Either or. It's totally at your discretion.
Gotcha. Well, I think it'll be a little bit quicker to do the Moog-flavoured one, shall we?
Yeah, there's not exactly a lot to say about it, really.
No. It's back.
Yes, it is back. I wasn't overly surprised, but a lot of the information had been embargoed, and as I hadn't been in the store for a long time, I didn't find out about any of this until last week when I went back. Suddenly it was, this is a thing, and this other thing is a thing as well.
And this first thing that we're talking about is the Moog Model D re-issue.
Yeah,
there it is. So, prepare your undergarments. The price.
Yes, the price.
Ooh, the price. £5,290.99 in the UK at the moment.
And I think we worked out the last one that we can both recall being sold from the store was late 2018, possibly, something like that. And that was priced at $3,300, which was what they were retailing for then. So in the interim period, they've gone up by another £2,000.
Yeah, adjusted for inflation, the $3,300 comes out at $3,931. It's a big old jump in price, that one.
Yeah, I suspect we'll sell them. I suspect we'll sell them real quick because there's
probably another case of the Profit 5 and 10 in a certain sense.
Well, the Profit 5 and 10 are actually production models. This is another limited run, and very limited in this case as well.
How many did you say the shop was getting?
2 a month.
Yep, that's not quick.
Until they run out, which won't be very long.
Well, if nostalgia really is biting your left off, you can give it a go if you've got $5,000+.
And I believe we've most probably pre-sold a good proportion of those anyway.
Yeah, it'll be like the big ARP 2600, the Korg one.
It's that sort of thing. If you either get in at the top of the queue or you forget it.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Let's talk about something fresh-ish. Pete, do you want to take this one away?
Yeah, again, this is another product that was embargoed. There was knowledge of it for some time. And it's the new Sequential Trigon 6.
I quite like the name, actually.
I'm not quite sure. Do you think it's because it's got three oscillators?
I don't know, but it sounds like a dinosaur, which I think is quite fun.
Yeah, so apparently it's been stated that this was the last product that Dave Smith worked on it before his untimely demise, and they've now completed it to the point where it's going to be available at some point.
Soonish, maybe.
Yes.
One of those classic ones. According to the internet, Trigon is a supervillain published by DC Comics.
Okay.
A red-looking chap with devil horns. I'm not a comic book kind of person, so I don't know.
Was that Marvel or DC?
DC, that one.
Okay. I'm not au fait with either, to be no. honest, either. I'm not a comic aficionado.
So, this guy's got kind of your standard stuff, but the excitement kind of lives in the two key areas. So it's a low-pass filter, but it's a transistor ladder-based design, it seems, which is rather different, potentially, according to the internet. I don't really know. And then, do you say the oscillator was redesigned too?
I believe it's brand new oscillators. From what I heard, I briefly watched a video on this particular new product. I mean, they are stating that it is quite radical in respect to its design compared to previous sequential products. Notably, it is still in the OB6 / Prophet 6 chassis.
It's a great size.
And on the sequential website, they have all three, so it's regarded as out of that sort of range, so to speak, if you can call it a range. But they've got quite a large, I suppose they've kind of got rid of the Prophet X.
Is that kick the bucket now? It didn't sell well, did it?
No, I'm not sure if it's still a thing. We had product up to recently, but I'm not sure if that was residual. And obviously the Prophet 12 went quite some time ago, and then the Pro 2's gone, but that's been substituted by the Pro 3. But
oh yeah, I forgot about that. And the Take 5.
Yes, so they've got quite a large range, to be honest.
My gut feeling when I saw this was, and how is that massively different from anything else they do? So
difficult to say, because even with the OB6 and the Prophet 6, there's a sort of Venn diagram where they cross over quite strongly in the middle, where you can get both of those units that almost sound identical, but then they sort of diverse a bit. It'd be interesting to see how flexible it is in respect to what directions you can push the sounds shaping into.
Yeah, also from memory, it's been a long time since I've seen a Prophet 6 or an OB6. I think they have dark wood, don't they? This one has quite a fresh looking sort of beach look about it.
Yeah, it does look a bit light. I think that's the contrast with the dark surface, and then they've got the sort of smooth potentiometer caps, which are not normally the type they've used, unless they're the ones they're not even the ones from the Pro 3, are they?
They look new.
They're almost like the ones on the Mini Log and the Pro Log.
Yeah, I know the ones.
Sort of just smooth. Mm. So that's not really going to affect the sound, it's just the design of the knob cap. I mean, as with a lot of sequential products, there's a lot of familiar elements. You can see where they've plucked that component from synth. And so there's always a bit of mix and match, but they're definitely claiming there's a lot of freshness lurking under the covers.
Well, at least they've got those wonderful clickety-clackety buttons that I like so much for the presets and things.
Well, I'm glad there is for that price.
Ooh, and what is the price? I was literally just ooh, there it is.
Yeah, £3,399. I would imagine that translates to dollars and euros.
Yeah, most
likely.
I remember Prophet 6 when I first started at the shop 4-ish years ago, 2,600, 700.
Yeah, and then they went down to 2,400, I want to say, for a bit, and then recently they shot up to 2,999.
Oof, ouchie.
Yeah, that was a big chunk. So yeah, there was something like, certainly on the Prophet 6, it was a £600 jump overnight.
Oh yeah, that's a painful one.
And then this has jumped another £400 above that. I suppose they can get away with it initially because it's new and different, but it'd be interesting to see how well this sells. I have no idea when we're actually going to see one in the shop for demo purposes.
Yeah, who knows indeed. While browsing around a friendly neighborhood music dealer website, I noticed the Modal Cobalt 5S, the really tiny one. I kind of forgot those existed. They look kind of neat. Anyway, not last week. I think the week before, did I mention my synthesizer-y-ness was happening again?
Yeah, it was sprouting forth again.
Sprouting, indeed. I have, for the fourth time, a bit of a hankering for a Digitact. Again. I think that if I bought one, I think it would be my fourth.
Really? You've had one and sold it and had one and sold it?
So I borrowed one from the shop.
Yep.
I bought a B-stock from the shop, sold that, and then I bought one from Ben from ModCaf, and then sold that.
Right. But now, song mode.
Exactly. Yes, and there was an update before that which added some really cool mixing stuff where you can just use it as an effects box if you use the audio inputs, which is nice.
Mm. Well, I haven't applied the new firmware yet to gain song mode, but I am seriously thinking that I may sell my 1010 Music Black Box because it is now potentially surplus to requirement.
Well, you were quite frustrated with it. There were a few other issues that it just wasn't working out for you, was it?
It did the song mode. It's a very powerful instrument, but there was a certain... It's surprising how quick you hit the buffers with a lot of this equipment. You think there's going to be endless menu diving and endless depth to it, and then you suddenly realise you've run out of options.
Yeah.
So invariably, some of these devices aren't as feature dense as you might imagine.
I imagine it's very difficult to hit the buffers on Electron equipment.
Certainly on the big ones, anyway. Mm. But yes, I'm going to have to do some major firmware updates on lots of equipment.
Oh, yeah.
I keep saying I'm going to do it and never get round to it, but I really
do. It's not a very fun process, is it?
No. We have to do it quite a lot at the store as well, just to get everything up. So when you come home, it's not exactly what you want to carry on doing when you've been doing it for work as
Maybe there are some strange people out there that enjoy that. Like a deep clean of your car or your bike or something. I'm going to update every single bit of firmware I can find.
I think it's fine if you've just got a small little desktop set up and you can just think, but I've got to drag stuff out of flight cases and get it set up and all that sort of thing and get it near a computer or set up a laptop that I can bring to the item. Yeah. I just want to crack on and make music, not be faffing around with technology.
My brain has been daydreaming in parallel. You've got a couple of little pedal board setups.
Yeah.
You know how pedal train, they're not little at all, are they? They're massive. The bigger one is practically the size of a door, isn't it? It's one of those.
Well, it's bigger than as big as some of my biggest keyboard flight cases.
Chunk. Anyway, I'm thinking of, you know, pedal train do the kind of the micro ones, which are sort of two panels high and kind of...
Yeah, little tiny ones.
Less than half a meter wide. Actually, it'd have to be slightly bigger than that. But a desktop pedalboard mounted setup, which would be DigiTact, my little tiny Pod 64X, and then something like a 1010 Blue Box, the little mixer recorder situation.
That's quite an expensive mixer.
It is quite an expensive one.
There are cheaper options.
But they're all big.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, you're right. They are all... Well, they're not that big. That the pedal format radial mixer that I've got is not too big. It's
true.
It's about the size of a Strymon Big Sky.
Oh, yeah, good point. The double pedal format size.
Yes. Mm. I think you most probably would have to consider a slightly larger pedal board than you're contemplating. Because if you think about mine, which is huge, it hasn't really got a lot on it.
Mm. Well, even a DigiTact and the modular is still an incredibly flexible machine.
Yes.
Mm. Daydreaming about the music I wouldn't make with it. Anyway, it's time to wrap this one up today. That, of course, means the miscellaneous multimedia recommendations from both of us. Pete, what have you over there for us?
Right, again, not YouTube this week.
You're right.
Yes, perfectly fine. As I mentioned before, when I was recommending a previous YouTube channel, I'm not a massive conspiratorial type.
Yes, I remember.
But there are some interesting aspects of certain things that are not quite accepted science, but are on the fringe and have got plausibility to them. One particular gentleman,
delicately phrased,
who has been promoting certain theories for a number of years is the journalist Graham Hancock. Are you familiar with him at all?
It rings a bell for some reason, but I can't think why.
He did a series of Channel 4 programmes about 20 years ago on this particular subject, and he's been doing lectures and writing books, and basically that's his business, so to speak. So he has been of the opinion that several things have happened in the distant past that have affected humanity in a dramatic way. So one theory that he's got, and they are connected, is that there were certain relatively advanced civilizations prior to when we think civilization started. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking technology and flying machines or anything like that. We're just talking more advanced than hunter-gatherers.
Right.
So they build, they've got architecture and other technologies like that. And his theory is that they're all wiped out by massive catastrophes that happened in the distant past, about 12,500 years ago. And he's linked it up with certain bits of cutting-edge research that say there was some sort of strange event that happened in that time period, 12,500 years ago, where the sea levels, there was a massive melt-up of polar ice, and sea levels rose about 400 feet.
Oh, wow.
So obliterating.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened very rapidly. And his theory is that it happened from the fragments of a comet which broke up. And it was a sequence of comet strikes that happened
right
in short order. And he's now done a 8-part series, which is on Netflix. And it's called Ancient Apocalypse. And I have watched the whole series. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually rewatching it as well just to fill in. Because I tend to watch these sort of things in bed at night with my iPad and find myself sort of nodding off.
Oh, yeah.
Missing half the program or something like that.
Wake up with the iPad on your face or something.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So it's definitely worth a watch.
Mm.
It's not scientific or archaeological orthodoxy.
Mm.
However, some of the experts that he's consulting are genuine archaeologists and earth scientists and so forth. And there's just enough evidence to make his theory plausible. And we all know that in the past, certain people came up with radical, whether it's a physics kind of theory or something else like that. And they spent years kind of in the wilderness being shunned because it didn't fit in with the orthodoxy of that particular time. And so, you know, this may become mainstream as things go on. Certainly, there looks like there was an event. In fact, the scientists call it the Younger Dryas event.
Oh, yeah.
And there are sort of layers of ash and burning exactly at that time. And there's a massive die-off of the megafauna, you know, the mammoths and the saber-toothed tigers and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, it's still entertaining and it's still thought-provoking. And I would recommend it to anyone who may be interested in that type of thing. So it is the Graham Hancock series entitled Ancient Apocalypse, and it's an 8-part series on Netflix, and that's my multimedia recommendation for this week.
Wonderful stuff. I'm going to pass on a recommendation from Sam, who was, I think, on one of the episodes of this podcast a long time ago, another pub one, maybe even only in the double digits way back when. Who knows if we're going to be able to find it. Anyway, there is a band with a funny name. They're called Thumpasaurus, spelt as you would imagine, and they seem to be very gifted, jazzy, fusion-y type people. As such, they go all over in terms of genres, but they're all excellent and strange and slightly funny and weird. The two tunes will be Struttin', which is strutting without the G and an apostrophe on the end, and I'm Pissed. I'm Talking to You. That's how the song goes. Anyway, Thumpasaurus. Go check them out. They've got an album with these tunes on called Thumpaverse, which is also spelt like you would expect. It's a blast. Good fun. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to this wonderful podcast. I'm biased, but I think it's quite wonderful. We hope you stick around. And you, that one person in Australia, thank you for chewing through the back catalogue. You won't hear this message for a long time, so I hope we don't, you know, scare you off with a previous episode. But thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.